NHL playoff races, and TV talk with my Yoda of broadcasting. It's John Shannon. He walks us through the West, what's happening there, and Boston's quest for excellence. But the rabbit hole that we fall down today involves what makes an NHL player a really good broadcaster. It's Behind the Curtain on The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Huzzah! Oh, how'd that feel, old man? That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke!
Hit him, light him up,
Yeah, nice hit! That's solid.
This is my favorite time of the year. The Stanley Cup playoff stretch drive, where we get into all the different races, the scenarios, those trying to make a late push, and the rest management, the load management side of the clubs at the very top. And in between, you've got some storylines to dissect, and our story manipulator, that's what you do. You dive into the storylines, and then you create them to fit your own narrative, and then you come up with something that's brilliant. As a TV person, that's what TV people do. They manipulate the storylines. A former head of Hockey Night in Canada on a couple of different occasions, and the co-host of the Bob McCowan podcast, it's John Shannon, my old friend from the other network days.
The fascination, Darren, is that it's just create two or three little threads, you know, and see over two or three hours, you can find a way to finish the thread. Start over here with a storyline about, you know, Dean Evason, and at the 2.5 hours later, have we created a better storyline that makes Dean Evason look like Dean Evason looks like a wrestler behind the bench sometimes, doesn't he? I mean, it looks like, you know, Bobby the Brain or something, you know, the eyes and the passion, and he's a fantastic. I love watching Dean Evason, don't you?
Okay, so Dean and I go back a long time.
I know you do.
And Dean's brother, Heavy, was a great mentor of mine.
Heavy Evason?
Heavy Evason. His real name is Danny. His birth name was Danny, okay. but Heavy was a bigger guy, so he adopted the name Heavy. He was the most fun-loving, great, gregarious person ever. But Dean is as intense. And I don't think there's a coach outside of Bruce Cassidy and Joel Quenneville, when he coached, who loves to win, wants to win more, and then is as equally passionate when things aren't going great, like showing emotion.
I am always amazed when I watch the Wild play, of how Dean can get so emotionally involved in the game and still make solid decisions. Because I think that's a real challenge. Every coach that you watch has to take that step back. You know, the team scores, no reaction, because I've got to be ready. Who's coming out next? Dean doesn't care. He's in there like an ex-player. I think it's fantastic. I'd love to see more of it. I really would from a lot of guys.
I was talking to somebody last night about when the lips start moving. On D, when they show, and it's the home team broadcast that shows it all the time. They go right to Dean. Whoever's directing that show is on that storyline.
Well, I mean, that's good television. That's exactly what it is. You know, and in many ways, you know, teams often reflect the personalities of their coaches. You know, for the longest time, the Wild reflected Jacques Lemaire, even after Jacques Lemaire was gone. And it was, you know, I love Jacques, but Jacques was not the most outgoing personality, you know, in the media world. But Dean is fantastic. I think Minnesota people have to be lucky they have them there. And I think what he's done, what Billy Guerin have done, is just marvelous with the Wild. And who I was one of those guys that thought they would be on the outside looking in by now. I really did. With all the cap issues they had, with everything that was going on there, you know, still paying the price for the Suter-Parise contracts, you know, could they be a one-trick pony with Kaprizov playing? But man, oh man, oh man, are they any good? They are a fun team to watch.
I also didn't think that they were going to qualify for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Did you tell Dean that? Are you nuts? Not a chance.
Okay.
I saw him earlier this year, and it was Vegas beat them. And I said, we'd planned. I said, I'll come by and see you after the game again. I didn't go down and see him after that game. No way. And we're supposed to see each other this weekend because there's a home and home between Minnesota and Vegas. And I won't be telling him that this time.
Well, it's why? Because this podcast won't go out until Monday.
No. It'll go out. But I'm not going to tell him. If somebody else tells him,
that's even worse.
My chances.
That's even worse. You know, some guy from the PR department walks up to him and says, "Millard didn't think we're going to make the playoffs." You can't do that. You got to go right to his face and tell him.
We've already been down this path. He scares me. Like when he gets fired up. No way. So why do you think Minnesota's successful? Philip Gustafson, who they got. What a deal that Billy Guerin swung with Ottawa, right? And the Cam Talbot swap.
Well, I think he thought he was doing Pierre Dorion a favor. You know, we'll take a goalie off your hands. You know, Cam Talbot was supposed to be the, you know, and unfortunately Cam, who I think we all like, has just been too banged up. But no, I don't think anybody in Ottawa who has been around the club, watching them for the years that Gustafson was in the system, thought he would be this good. Nobody thought he would be this good.
No,
I
know that for a fact.
He's been fantastic.
They didn't think as highly of Gustafson, and there was nothing to say that should have been the case, unless you did the deep dive into goaltending, that this was going to turn out the way it has.
Yeah. No, it's a really good story, to the point where when you see them play Gustafson against Colorado in maybe the most important game of the season so far, is that kind of a cryptic message that Gustafson's going to start the playoffs?
Well, I don't think it's cryptic at all. I don't know what lens you're looking through right now, but it's pretty clear to me.
I'm an old guy. I'm loyal to old players.
Cataracts?
I don't
have. Have you had those?
What? How old do you think I am?
I know.
Come on.
That's just what I do. People make fun of me having cataracts. You're one of the few people that's got like 1 or 2 years on me. I just pay it forward, man. I get it from the kids all the time.
No, if you look at how Marc-Andre Fleury's played the last month, you look at the way Gustafson's played the last month. If you're answering the simple question, who gives you a better chance to win? Mm-hmm. And I think last night your pal Dean gave us a little hint that he thinks that Gustafson's going to give them a better chance to win the big games.
You know how we'll know when that decision's made?
No, what you're not going to suggest that an agent's going to put out a tweet or anything, are you?
Yeah, exactly.
We think too much.
You and I are two peas in a pod.
We think too much alike, I know.
That's exactly how we'll know. Just follow Twitter.
No, folks. It won't. No, because I think that Marc-Andre Fleury, in this world, with one of his best friends being the general manager, I think has realized that he can be a great team player and be an important part of the Wild success, no matter what he does, whether it's on the bench or on the ice. And if Gustafson does fault, then there's Fleury there to pick up the slack. So it may not be the wrong decision. I saw Henrik Lundqvist on TNT last night talk about it, saying that he would pick Gustafson, but that's because Gustafson went to his hockey school as a kid. But they would probably be wise, according to Lundqvist, to start Gustafson in that first game in the playoffs.
Tell you what, going back to a Hall of Famer gives you more insurance than going to somebody that's never been there before, even though he's had a great season.
Well, and I think the point could be who's your goalie of the future? Who are you going to invest in now for the next 3 to 5 years? And right now the answer would be Gustafson.
Yeah.
Marc-Andre Fleury might not be playing in 5 years.
Yeah. He'll be doing a podcast with us in 5 years.
I hate the competition. He'd be good. He'd be really good. I don't need any more competition. We've been fending it off for a while now.
That creates a good conversation though. Like, do you think he'd be good on the TV side?
He's got a great sense of humor. I really believe in goalies as analysts, because I think that they're the one position that plays 60 minutes. Not 23, 25. They don't really have time off, so they have to keep watching the whole game. So that's important in television, to watch everything all the time. But I would certainly give him a chance. I would certainly put him on a panel and say, let's have some fun, you know. And there are those. Now, the interesting part with Marc-Andre is that, you know, would that be on TVA or RDS, or would that be on TNT or Sportsnet? You know, there's a lot of guys that are tremendous broadcasters in the province of Quebec that don't translate to English. And would Marc-André's accent / English translate well to an English language network? It's an interesting question. Marty Baron's done a marvelous job. Marty Baron has been fantastic at it. Yep. I see no reason why Marc-André Fleury wouldn't be too.
You were on that side before you became one of us as a commentator.
Yeah, I got lazy, so I became an announcer.
That's true, isn't it?
Oh, this is the greatest snow job in the history of broadcasting. The amount of work you do as a producer versus, you know, the tip of the iceberg you do as an announcer. It's unbelievable. I'm just kicking myself. It took me 35 years to figure it out. You know,
and you're one of those that can actually look at it from both sides. And then when the announcer complains, you just roll. Like another announcer will come up to you now and say, oh, I'm just so busy. And then you slam them.
Suck it up.
What do you look for if you're watching the National Hockey League right now and you're saying, okay, I need two or three people to start a network or join a broadcast? What are you looking for in being able to transition from a personality on the ice to on the desk and in front of the camera?
You need somebody who was prepared to invest the time. You know, there's a lot of players, there's a lot of former players that think, well, I'm going to retire, I'm just going to go into broadcasting. I don't think they realize that there is work involved in this. There is the necessity to talk to people. There is the necessity to watch a lot of hockey games. You know, you'd be amazed how many former players that I've talked to over the years that if their team's not playing, they don't watch. You know, so it's a Thursday night. The Leafs are going to be playing Detroit on Friday. The Red Wings are playing Friday. I had a friend of mine who was a longtime defenseman for the Maple Leafs. Are you watching the game tonight? No. I only watch the games I play in. And I think there's a lot more players that just do that. They get into the, you know, I can only control my 82 games. This is my business. Now there are a lot of players that are TV-aholics, hockey-aholics, that just love watching games. And so that's one of the first tests. The other test is, it's going to sound silly, is to learn how to speak the English language. To understand
more in sound bites, you mean?
Well, 20 to 25 seconds helps, but you know, that understand the difference between went and gone, you know, and well and good. You know, those things are, in the end, those little things are important. Maybe I'm a little biased. My dad was a high school English teacher. So, but being able to speak to people properly is important. So those are two aspects of it. You can see passionate guys who want to be in the business that ask questions. You know, in my day as an old producer, we used to, this was long before, you know, there were physio coaches and exercise bikes and they're everywhere. And I worked with a lot of teams that if the guys weren't playing, they would want to come and watch the game in the truck, in the TV mobile, because
any names on that? I'm curious about.
Well, I would tell you that in the 1980s, both the 21st, 22nd player of the Calgary Flames, or an injured player for the Flames, or an injured player for the Edmonton Oilers at the same time, they would come and watch the game in the truck. Kevin Lowe didn't play a playoff game in 1985, sat in the whole truck watching the game.
Wow.
Because they said to us at the time, this is as close to the adrenaline rush of playing the game that you get, the amount of activity, the amount of pressure, the amount of yelling that goes on, and trying to work together as a team. And so there are a lot of players loved it. And a few of those guys over the years, you know, said, I think I can do this. I want to be in this business. Jamie Baker was a good example, who was a longtime announcer in San Jose, now living in Ottawa, was one of those guys when he was a Maple Leaf came in and did it, and enjoyed it and got fascinated by what the process was. So that wanting to be involved and knowing things like that are important. Jim Poplinski was the same way. He became a broadcaster. So that's important. The key thing to get a new announcer player is you have to remind them that for 18 months, you are going to be the flavor of the month because every player in the league, 700 players in the league you played against, in theory, you'll know everybody and you can talk about them easily. But in year two, there'll only be 350 guys that are the same. In year three, there'll be 200. You know, in 5 years, there'll be 100 guys that you know in the league. So you can't just talk about 100 players. You have to be able to talk about 700. So are you prepared to work hard to talk to people, to go into the visitor's dressing room now that we can go back into dressing rooms? Are you prepared to go in and talk to a coach that you probably might have played against and hate and fought to get information and be honest about it? Those are the challenges of finding good broadcasters. Lots of guys are glib. Lots of guys are open, honest, great personalities. But you have to be able to work at it. You have to want to work at it. You have to have a passion for the game like that, as opposed to that of a player.
So this is a rabbit hole that I didn't expect to go down, but just because you're a good interviewer, and this is what I hear from people all the time, he's going to be a great broadcaster. They're so funny. They're such a great interview. I can't wait to see them in broadcasting. Translates less than you would ever expect.
It does. And the other aspect of it is a rather practical one, is that, you know, a 15-year hockey career, you've been away from your family 50% of the time. Your kids are now growing up. Are you prepared to put a similar amount of effort into traveling commercially? That means on a regular airplane without a charter. Mm-hmm. Are you prepared to spend all of that time away by yourself because you're used to traveling with 50 people? It's a different mentality. Lots of guys say, I don't want to travel by myself. I'm so used to traveling with the team. And then on top of that is, I already have enough money. I don't need to work hard. And let's say I respect and understand how hard players have worked to get to the National Hockey League and continue to work as they are players in the game and the physical burden on their body. But you have to be prepared to work hard. And I think there's lots of guys that have so much money in the bank now, they say, I don't need this. I don't need this pressure. I don't need this demand. I don't need to go working for a coach and a manager to working for another coach and a manager that don't have the same beliefs and philosophies that I do.
The book is Evolve or Die that you just put out. And there's some touching on this subject.
Well, I just happen to have a copy.
You brought props.
I always have props here. This is my work desk, though.
I didn't plan on doing this. That's no. Really good. So it's just sitting there all the time?
Yeah, just in case on a Zoom call, I have to show it.
But you touch on a little bit that you had Bobby Hull as a broadcaster. You had different players who wanted to be broadcasters that maybe didn't treat people great when they were players. Try and get into it. It's kind of cool how this has all come together.
I mean, the best example to me was John Davidson. Because John Davidson, who was a really good goalie in the National Hockey League, started in St. Louis, went to the Rangers, had his career cut short because of really bad knees, probably not working as hard. And I hope he would tell you this. He and I have talked about it, not working as hard off the ice from a training perspective, from a training regimen, living and loving the life in New York City. And when he got a job first with Madison Square Garden and then with us at Hockey Night in Canada, a light bulb went on and said, holy smokes, I can make a career out of this. I can be in broadcasting much longer than I could as a player. So here he was a 10-year NHLer. And until he got the job in St. Louis the first time around in, what was that, 2007 or 2008, that was almost a 30-year run for him as a broadcaster. And he worked as diligently as a broadcaster as most coaches and scouts and managers do in their jobs. And that's what made him so good, because he understood every aspect of the TV side. And he also understood every aspect of what it was like to play. And he found a simple, efficient way to communicate stories. And, but it, it took a lot of work. He worked his tail off for a long time.
Okay. One more on this. Are you impressed with what Lundqvist has done? Because there's a guy with all kinds of cash, all kinds of cachet,
yeah,
and is still working on the broadcasting side with MSG and TNT.
I think Henrik's really good. I also think it's important to notice, you know, that it, English is a second language for him, and you wouldn't know it at any time. That's, that to me is really fascinating. Henrik, but ask me in 5 years, you know, and I think this is where you, this, this becomes the issue, is you invest in players, and then 3 or 4 years in, you know, they sag with their information because they don't know anybody anymore. And are they willing to talk about it? If you if you give Henrik, okay, Henrik, we want you to specialize in goaltending. We want you to talk about that all the time. Henrik can work until he's 90. But if we expect Henrik to do a lot more analysis, a lot more storytelling, not about himself, but about the players and the people in the game, then he's going to have to work at it. And I've never met Henrik in my life. I don't know him. And, you know, I get told by friends that he's prepared to work. Then if that's the case, then fantastic. Good luck.
If you ran into Lundqvist at a gathering of a casual nature, would you call him Henrik or Hank?
I'd call him Henrik.
He would.
Yeah. I'm not
I'm going Hank all day, and I'm giving him the bro hug and everything. Like I'm getting all in there. You're going formal.
Yeah, but I'm older than you, and I still call a couple of guys Mister. You know, and as you know, I don't even use nicknames.
No, you don't. So you hate them, Shanny.
I know. By the way, Shanny, the first time. Shanny was ever used as a nickname for me was when I got on TV in Canada with
because
all you guys,
with
you, yeah. Oh, you know, with you and McLean and Kiprios. Hey, Shanny, I was looking around saying, what
do people call you?
John. it's amazing what people, they call you by your name. Brendan Shanahan and I laugh about this all the time, because we were having dinner one night, and he said to me, he says, every time I see you now, somebody says Shanny. And I look around and I said, why are they talking to me? Because he's Shanny. I'm not Shanny. He's Shanny.
Hey, what do you think the pressure is on that group right now going into the playoffs, where things are settled, but nothing's accomplished at all?
I don't think there's as much as people real internally as much as people
really envision. Looks like jobs are on the line.
Yeah, get another job. I think, and I do think that there are people in the organization said, not to worry, we have done all we can do. You know what? There is nothing more that Kyle Dubas can do. There isn't. He has tried to change the roster to give it playoff moxie. You know, does it have more grit? Yeah. It does, particularly when O'Reilly comes back from injury. You know, Lafferty has, I think Sam Lafferty was a great acquisition. I don't think anybody can argue with, you know, Marner's, Matthews, Tavares, Nylander as great scorers, as great offensive skill guys. They now have an extra element or two that we've all, you know, those of us that have watched this team for a long time, I've said they needed, and they went out and got them, and good for them. Kyle can't do much more. You know, do they have some issues on defense? Maybe. You know, Morgan Riley needs to be better than he's played, but we know he can do that. I would always want Mark Giordano on my team. I really would. I think Mark Giordano is a quality player at his age. What he's doing is remarkable. TJ Brody the same way. I think they're okay in certain scenarios, you know. And then it goes back to your favorite position, you know, Samsonov or Murray, and right now I think it's Samsonov's job. So
when I looked at the numbers 25 different goaltenders started games last year in the playoffs. And that was the high mark. It was like 21, 19, in the years previous. We might approach 30 different goalies starting this year, the Stanley Cup playoffs, because so many different eight of the 16, I could go either way right now with a game one starter.
Yeah, you're probably, you may be right. But I look at what Colorado went through last year. I think they wanted to play Darcy Kuemper every night, but he was hurt. I think that that's the one, and I think that becomes the real issue at this time of year with a lot of teams is how do I make sure my goaltending or my goaltender is healthy? You know, do they play too much? You know, but if you play too much and you get into the playoffs and you get into the pressure, do you tweak something? And then all of a sudden you're going to your number two guy. That's what happened in Colorado with injury to Darcy and Francois. And Francois came in and played remarkably well for them. So
I'll give you a pop quiz here.
Okay.
We'll go through a couple of teams. L.A., Copley or Koskinen? Who starts game one?
Who? Not Koskinen. Come on. Get into this century. Corpusalo, you mean?
Corpusalo, sorry. You gotta be up with the league. Sorry.
Yeah. Come on. You know, this is 2023, pal. Corpusalo. Phoenix Copley's a great story, but Corpusalo's your goalie of record.
Really? Okay. Skinner, I would go the other way. Skinner or Campbell?
Skinner.
Quick or Bressois?
Thompson.
You're going off the board there? If he's healthy, obviously.
If he's healthy, yeah. Okay. If he's healthy. By the way, how many goals? I mean, do you remember the first year watching Dylan, what's his name? The kid?
Ferguson. Who,
yeah.
See, I didn't bust on you.
Yeah, you did just now. Watching Dylan Ferguson play reminds me of the 9 minutes. I was in the building in Edmonton the night he played the 9 minutes. He was one of the five goalies the first year that the Golden Knights were in. Has a team gone through more goaltenders in 5 years than the Golden Knights? There has to be, like, you'd have to have, in the old days, we used to call it when the names went on and like the credits, we'd have a crawl. I think you could do crawl. I think you could do a crawl of all the goalies that have played in Vegas over the 5 years. Five goalies in the first year, five goalies this year. Your great stat about four wins in a row with four different goalies. I mean, holy smokes. That to me is one of the great stories of the franchise when you consider how consistent they've been for the most part, other than last year's injuries, and all the goaltenders they've run through.
You said Samsonov over Murray?
Samsonov, yeah.
Okay. Oh, you're saying Samsonov now? I thought he changed it back to Samsonov. There's been different pronunciations of that one.
Well, I go back to all my expertise in Russian, and you always accent the second syllable. You know,
somebody once told me and tried to convince Drager and I that it was Teemu Selänne instead of Selänne because that's the way they said it in Finland.
Yeah.
And I have it's rare that you've seen Drager as passionate about something as that conversation.
So I got a couple of good stories about pronunciation. The big Russian defenseman in Vegas, how do you pronounce number 16's name?
Dorofiev.
See, I think Apple it's Dorofiev. I think it's Dorofiev.
Well, we asked him.
Did he anglicize it for you?
He said Dorofiev. So okay. I said when he first came up, I thought it was Dorofiev, but it's Dorofiev, and you have something totally different.
Well, I just go back to the common you take the second syllable of the name and you go Dorofiev. Mm-hmm. You know, Sorokin. You know,
he has fit in with William Karlsson when Riley Smith was going. He is just going like what a absolute surge into the game. Pavel Dorofiev has been.
He's big, huh? Big too.
Yeah, and skilled and skilled. Winnipeg, you cover Winnipeg a lot. No issues with pronunciations there, but there is a translation problem that's happening.
No, it's just lost in translation. boy. You know, this is one of those ones where, and I think the issue is twofold in Winnipeg right now is that, you know, there are guys just not buying into what Rick is wanting to do at this time of year, you know, clamping down, playing playoff style.
Why is that? Hockey. They went through the Maurice situation. Like, why?
I don't know. I mean, if I knew, I'd probably be on the payroll.
On the bench.
Oh, I'd be good, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
I'd be up on top. I'd be worse than Dean. I'd be like Dean. I'd be like the old days. Anyway, so
that's a reference to John in the truck.
No, that's not true. You never saw me in a truck.
No, I that's just not heard fair. Stories. Yeah, I just heard stories.
I know that these urban myths. I had a woman who worked for me for 25 years. She walked up to me, says, "You know, I really like working for you, but you're an urban myth." I said, "I'm just hard on people because I expect them to be as good as, you know, they're, you know, like I'm like Rick Bonus right now." Mm-hmm. I expect people to play and be prepared at a level to win every night. And that means you can't take every fourth shift off, and you can't coast, and you can't, you know, shoot the puck in and then glide. You know, this is a time of year you have to be prepared to put every ounce of will and ability into every time you're skating. And right now that's not happening for some of the guys in Winnipeg. It's just not. And that's the frustration. And yes, I'd play Connor Hellebuyck in goal. I'd go out on a limb. That's right. I know. Yeah.
Does it turn out okay, badly, or exceptionally well for Winnipeg?
Well, I don't see how it can turn out exceptionally well, period. Because even if they make the playoffs and they play either, you know, Minnesota, Dallas, or Colorado in the first round, or heck, you know, it may even be Vegas or Los Angeles or Edmonton. I mean, they could play anybody right now. I don't see them going very far. So I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of angst. You know, the market. You know, that there's going to be some, this is the year to blow it up conversation coming in Winnipeg, I think, at a certain point. The other part of the frustration, the second part of the fold in Winnipeg, is for the first 2.5 months, Darren, and you saw this from afar, they were the talk of the league.
Yeah.
They were one of the great stories in the game. Look what has happened. The Jets, you know, finally they're as good on the ice as they are on paper. And, you know, they are fantastic. And Rick Bonus, coach of the year. You know, Connor Hellebuyck, Vezina Trophy. Josh Morrissey, Norris Trophy. I got news for you. 0-3 now. You know, and that's the hardest part, is that, you know, they were able to show the people how well they could play as a team, how fun they could be to watch. And now it's just disappeared. So I think the fans in Winnipeg have a right to be frustrated.
Did you see Paul Maurice?
Yeah, wasn't that great?
I loved it.
Yeah, we can't use words like school. That on the podcast. Well, and he used one sentence at least 6 times, and it was only a 2-word sentence. I've seen Paul get mad before, but that to me was that was, do you want to be in the playoffs or not? That was, do you want to be in the playoffs or not? If you don't want to be in the playoffs, fine. If you want to be in the playoffs, then boom. And, you know, I'm not sure it worked. It certainly looks like it worked, you know, for a period of time. If you look at the bench, though, they got the win. But, I mean, you know, could the players be doing it in spite of Paul, for Paul? How are they doing it? I mean, you don't know. But there's only one guy looking directly at Paul the whole time, and that was Matt Tkachuk. He was looking right at him. The other guys were looking straight ahead. One guy was looking in the corner of his eye. But Matthew Tkachuk was looking right at him.
So what does that tell you?
Matthew's pretty confident in his abilities, and Matthew probably appreciated. I think Matthew Tkachuk probably appreciated the speech more than anybody. Not for his own good, but hey, stop being so nice to us all the time. You know, this is a business. Do your job, you know? God, that's got me riled up.
It does. I always like it when you reach out to me and give me guidance or direction or a tongue lashing.
I still like doing that. There's 30 or 40 guys in the NHL still get texts from me every once in a while.
And I appreciate it because it's difficult to get that kind of feedback because usually everybody ignores you if you're doing a bad job, or they don't care what you're doing because they just want to feed your ego because you're on TV. That's the reality of it. You speak the truth. And I think players are the same way. People are either filling their ears with greatness because they're players in the National Hockey League, or yeah, they don't say anything. They want direction.
By the way, same thing as broadcasters. Players, and this is, I think this is where I, you know, whether I screwed up or made a mistake as a production person, I treated every announcer like a player, because players love direct approach. Players want, you know, want to hear you say, just stop it. Don't do that again. And if you went to a host or a professional broadcaster and hit the key and said, stop it, don't do it again, their hearts would sink. You know, they would start to perspire a lot. And then after the game, it would take you 2 hours to coddle them, to say, I wasn't being angry. I'm just telling you the truth, and I'm trying to be efficient. You know, quality of words are just, hey, you know, now you're bugging me, move on, you know. And those are simple levels of communication I think it's a lost art at times. There are sometimes the art may be a little, you know, outside the lines, but it's sometimes needed. But ex-players, when you deal with ex-players, players love it. You know, I still have, you know, if I have 100 friends that are in the business still and are in the NHL, and 50 of them are hockey players, all 50 think it's great when I say, stop doing that. Oh, okay, good, thanks, appreciate it. And I usually tell them why, too. I usually tell them, here's why you should stop. And they say, that I've never heard that before. Well, you know what? I'm a viewer. I you know, I'm watching you and you're driving me crazy. So stop it. Okay.
I'm serious when I tell you that I do appreciate it. And I've messaged that to you before, yeah, but for the world to know, like, you are a valuable resource, man. When it comes to that, for some feedback and guidance to get better.
Yeah, there isn't enough coaching in the NHL and across the league and broadcasting anymore, because it's one of the downsides, Darren, of...
Because you used to do it, right?
We used to do it a lot. We used to do it a lot. I'd literally, when I was running Hockey Night, I'd go on the road and stay an extra day with a commentator and sit and go through tape. And then I still remember Mark Crawford was working for us 1 year, and we're sitting at a hotel room in Calgary, and it's a Sunday morning, and we play the tape, and I say, did you see that? Did you see that right there? He said, yeah, I just saw that for the first time. I said, how can I see that? And you can't see that. And I've never played a day of hockey in the NHL. He says, that's a really good point. I says, maybe you're looking too close. Take a step back, you know, take a step back at things. Mark always appreciated that. So
you're watching game film with him?
Yeah. Well, his shows, his broadcast.
Yeah.
And say, why did you, and I'd stop and say, why'd you say that there? Why would you do that? And here's how many times do you need to say it? And, you know, my pet peeve right now is that color men, I call them color men. Mm-hmm. Half the people call them color analysts, which drives me nuts, because a color man is the guy in the broadcast booth. An analyst is a guy in the studio. They're not both. So the color men want to, because there's a gap in the play-by-play, color men now feel that they have a chance for 10 seconds to 20 seconds to explain what they just saw. So why would you do that? Because you're going to get a replay, and then you're just going to repeat yourself. So now I'm going to hear it from you twice. I don't want to hear it from you twice. Well, you know who's brilliant at this? Eddie Olczyk is brilliant at this. I want him to give me four words to say, great hit, Makar. Boom. Oh, and now we can come back 20 seconds later with the play, with Makar, hitting Hartman. And now he can get into deeper detail. Eddie Olczyk has mastered the two or three line interjection into a game. It's really good. Anybody who wants to be a color man should listen to Eddie right now, because he does it. He does a marvelous job of it, and he doesn't become overburdened. And then the other thing is old school. I know. There's two things I need out of a broadcast. You've heard me say this a million times, Darren. I want to see the puck go in the net, and I want to hear the play-by-play guy say, he shoots, he scores. So if the color man's talking, if the color man is talking and telling a story what he saw 20 seconds ago and the puck goes in the net, I'm really ticked. I am angry. You robbed me of the one, you know, we could have, we're only going to have seven events like this in 3 hours. And you've right. robbed me of he shoots, he scores. Yeah. You've robbed me of my the voice of Dave Gosher or John Shorthouse or Jack Michaels to say he scores. You can't do that. That's telling me that you don't really respect what the other guy's doing, that you feel you have to, you know, yammer on about something you saw, which, by the way, as a viewer, I saw too. I saw that. You don't need to tell me exactly what you saw. You need to tell me why it's going to be good to talk about.
I got some kind of wacko pipe going in my hotel in San Jose. Sorry. Okay, good. Good. Yammer is a great word. One more question, but to finish this up, do you have zones where the color man can talk, the color analyst?
Not the color analyst.
Color commentator, analyst person is allowed to
color
talk.
Color commentator. What a brilliant color commentator. Very good. That's good. I like that. I think it's very obvious to me that, if the puck goes across the offensive blue line, that's a great visual warning for the color man to stop talking. That's like crossing a finish line. And by the way, so the puck goes across the offensive zone, it's being carried across the line, you know, finish your thought in a second. Because, you know, if you finish your shot in a second or two, then the play-by-play guy still has chance to pick it up and carry the puck into the offensive zone and to have the puck go in the net. And just, it's a simple thing. He shoots, he scores. I want to be able to hear it every time.
Do you want that phrase?
No, there's different ways to say it. That's Foster Hewitt. That's, Bob Cole, you had a different one. Lloyd Pettit, the great Lloyd Pettit in Chicago, had another one, shot in a goal. You know, Jack Edwards says something different. Sam Rosen, you know, I see, there's a good example. And the guys in New York, Joe Micheletti understands this. John Davidson before understood it. Because if the Rangers are on the power play, you know, I want to hear Sam say, Rangers scores. It's a power play goal. But no, the color man might be talking about what he saw 20 seconds ago in the other zone. And, you know, I don't want to hear that. So,
is the National Hockey League living its best life right now with the best of both worlds, a great team in Boston, and then parity everywhere else? And I'm looking at Boston going, how good can it get? How good do they want it to get in the last 2.5 weeks?
Boston, the key thing for me for Boston just has to stay healthy, right? Just stay healthy. Get to game 83 and be healthy. What I would say is, I don't know. I'm not going to answer your question. I'm just going to answer what I want to answer. is that, you know, we always talk about, and people ask about, are you going to expand the playoffs? Are you going to make the playoffs better? You know, the NBA has gone to the play-in round. We've been in the play-in round for a month. We're going to have 2.5 more weeks of play-in round, because when you think about what the drive in the West is, you know, and how the great story in Nashville of them coming back, Calgary, do they finally have their mojo going? Can Winnipeg get their act together? You know, similar scenario with what's happened with Florida and the Islanders and Pittsburgh. Those are our play-in rounds. And though our play-in rounds are going to last 6 weeks, they're not going to last 2 nights. So that's really good for the game. That's exciting. That's keeping people involved. And so I guess my answer to your question is, yeah, I think it is the best of both worlds. You know, there's, and by the way, you know, the Stanley Cup champions are still the Colorado Avalanche, and they will be until somebody beats them. And I'm still not convinced that anybody can beat them when they get 100%. I think they're that good still. Even though Minnesota was a great story, I think in a series, when you get Nate McKinnon and Rantanen and Makar's still not 100% to me. Something wrong with Makar.
I tell you what, Byram and Gerard have been great.
Yeah, but they need Cale Makar. Yeah. They need Cale Makar. And then, you know, they're still champs until somebody beats them. And then in the East, everybody is gunning for the Bruins. It's going to be fun to watch.
I love having a favorite. I do.
I think it's a good point. I really do. And by the way, I think you saw five teams at the deadline say that we've got to find a way to beat Boston. So we better trade for players.
As we wrap it up, what takeaway do you want Bob Bender to walk off into the sunset with today from all of our discussion about broadcast and hockey?
That I'm not really a nut bar.
You aren't a nut bar. I know you're passionate.
I think we could do better. I think we could do better all the time in television. I think we need to do better all the time in television, but I really think the product's fun to watch. And the one thing I would also say is, as passionate as I am about certain things, is you take a step back and watch the event that we're doing and enjoy it. Don't get so emotionally involved in every aspect of it. Still enjoy it. I mean, that one of the reason I'm still in the game, Darren, is I still love it. I mean, heck, I was driving home from an event last night and I got a passenger and he says, what are you doing? I says, well, I got to turn the radio on. I got to listen to the Avalanche game. You know, I got to have it on before I get home and watch the end of it on TNT. I got to have that. You know, I can't get enough of it, you know, now. And so that to me is, and by the way, Connor McGehee's one of my favorite guys in Colorado. He's one of the greats. So he was a good host in Vegas too, by the way.
He was a good host.
Connor's good. He's a fun broadcaster.
I think that the new guy, like the guy that's been there for the last couple of years, has done a pretty good job though.
Well, Lawless?
No, he doesn't host.
Oh, he's a color analyst.
He's a color analyst. You've got three TVs behind you. So I know you watch a lot of games. So you probably have to get to it right now. Thanks, buddy. You're the best. Have I ever told you that? That is the world of you.
Stop. Yeah, you know.
Like, seriously, Bob loves you too. We all love you.
Have a great day.
I could have John Shannon on the podcast every day, like 7 days a week. I could have him on. Now, there's two problems with that. One, Bob Bender doesn't want to talk to me every day of the week. And number two, John Shannon's got other things to do. But I would seriously, there's so many different ways and places that you can go. And he's a really good interview. Check out his podcast, the Bob McCown podcast, where they have multi-sports. They don't just deal with hockey, but John does some work with Edmonton on the Oilers side of it and the Jets side of it. And he's really tapped in. And the range for me as an interviewer, as a host, being able to go any different direction, whatever pops in my head, I know that I can lean on him with something. That is invaluable. I love it. And that whole idea of booth and studio and what they talk about and what they should be saying, what they don't, he's really good. He sends me notes all the time. Some of them I take some time to get back to him because I need to process it or digest it or just get over the hurt. That's another way to put it. But the other times it's like the light bulb is just on and I'm like, why would I say something like that? Stories that I'm following in the final 2.5 weeks of the NHL regular season, Edmonton's quest for the best power play of all time in a single season. I watched it firsthand. There was a home and home between Vegas and Edmonton. And it's sensational. We know that, but it's even better in person when you get to watch it. And they're pushing 33%. It's wild. Winnipeg, I think, gets in, and Florida gets in. There's two storylines to follow. But Minnesota is officially my Cinderella, what they've been able to do. Even though they're trying to lock down a division title, I love what they've been able to do because I didn't have them in at the start of the year. And what Dino's been able to accomplish is outstanding. And when you examine Seattle, they're going to make the playoffs in their second season. It's unprecedented in the sense of only a couple of teams have done that. So I guess it's tri-precedented. Florida got in their third year. Vegas got it in their first year. But that's the elite status. But because of what Vegas did 6 years ago, Seattle has to win a round to really make it special because Vegas did what they did. It's unfair. It's totally unfair. But that's just my thought. Wishing everybody up there the best of luck as they try to make something happen in the second year with the Seattle Kraken. Appreciate it, John, wherever you are right now. And Bob, take those lessons. Like, just don't listen to it and flush it. Bob, take those lessons and absorb them. We'll talk to you next week on The Chirp with Darren Millard.